This is Dan's Mega 65 Digest for April 2025. Mega 65, the first 10 years. Ten years ago, Paul Gardner-Stephen and the Museum of Electronic Games and Art announced a joint effort to recreate the Commodore 65. The Mega 65 would be an open hardware, open source product based on the original Commodore designs and prototypes, manufactured in Germany and sold worldwide. Instead of fading into obscurity as a historical footnote, the Commodore 65 would achieve new potential as a modern-day platform for recreational computing, a revival both familiar and new to thousands of people looking for a way to reconnect with the creativity, stimulation, comfort, and digital sovereignty of the 8-bit era. In this special edition of the Digest, we'll review the first 10 years of the Mega 65 project through published media, articles, videos, and conference talks. I've packed the article with links, so you can visit these at your leisure. Experience the project through the eyes of the people that built it and the community around it. We also have some exciting announcements to celebrate the anniversary. Don't miss this one. The great Mega 65 egg hunt begins. Breaking news from Deft, and here I'm quoting, "Having used citations and celebrated events from the history of computer nerds, and being fans of the book, not the movie, Ready Player One, we have hidden an Easter egg in every Mega 65. The first person to find it will win an insane piece of Mega 65 history, the very first working and beautifully shaped Mega 65 prototype, shown in 2015 at Amiga 30 in Neuss, Germany, 6 months after the project was officially announced by Paul Gardner-Stephen and Detlef Hastic. This unicorn computer has an insurance value of over $15,000, is signed by Dave Haney, R.J. Michael, Chris Hulsbeck, Dino Dini, and other famous people, sports an unprinted original C65 keyboard inside an SLS fabricated C65 case, yes, it's made with lasers, and it also works. Prepare for an unforgiving hunt through the depths of the Mega 65, through time and, of course, through space. There can only be one person to enter the nerd throne and win this nerd's dream machine. Will it take days, weeks, months, or even years to solve the mind-bending puzzles left by the creators and not discovered for years? Will you be the one to earn the crown? Friends and friends of the Mega 65 core team are not allowed to participate. Be prepared to be questioned. A timestamp will decide who the lucky winner is in case several people find the egg. It is allowed to build clans and search in groups." End quote. That's right, this one-of-a-kind piece of Mega 65 history can be yours if you know where to look. This multi-step trail has been under our noses for years and has not yet been discovered independently. Best of luck to everyone. Intro Disc Number 4. Every Mega 65 comes bundled with a large collection of software produced by the community, browsable by a menu that opens automatically when you first turn on the computer. The Intro Disc collection has added more titles each year since the Mega 65's debut in 2022, and it's time to expand it again. Intro Disc Number 4 is now available for download. The new archive has an all-new menu system by Mirage BD with music by Hein, and adds 72 new titles and dozens of articles about projects you can download and install. This brings the total size of the Intro Disc collection to 264 games, demos, and tools. The entire collection has been revised and tested with the upcoming version 0.97 release core, ROM, and system software. ID4 should work with released version 0.96, but if you notice issues, I recommend installing the test version of the upcoming release, as discussed in last month's Digest. Huge thanks to Gercha, who has spearheaded the Intro Disc project from the very beginning. Thanks to his efforts curating, building, and testing the collection, everyone can experience what the Mega 65 has to offer right out of the box. Screen full of basic compo last call. If you've been waiting until the last minute to enter the screen full of basic compo, congratulations, it is now the last minute. The itch.io game jam page will accept entries until 11:59 p.m. GMT, April 22, 2025. After the deadline, all entries will be revealed for download, and a friendly round of voting will begin. Try out all the entries for yourself, cheer on your fellow competitors in the comments, and boost your favorites. If you have any last-minute questions or technical issues with your entry, be sure to ask in the Discord or the forum64.de thread. Go, go, go! Commodore, the final years.
To match the higher intelligence of the new Commodore 128, an Apple IIc would have to add three more 2Cs to expand to 512K, an extra keypad, 30 block graphics sets, color sprites, two more voices, four instruments, a cartridge port, a joystick port, and a Commodore 64. Commodore 128 personal computer, a higher intelligence at a lower price.
At the Consumer Electronics Show of 1985 in Las Vegas, Nevada, Commodore Business Machines announced two new computers, the Commodore 128 and the Commodore LCD. The C128 went on to sell 2.5 million units over the next 4 years. The CLCD was canceled before it was released. That same year, Commodore began developing the 4502 CPU, later rebranded as the CSG65CE02. Originally intended as a more efficient CMOS version of the 6502, the final design of the 4502 was faster and more featureful, compatible with the documented 6502 instruction set, with new instructions and enhancements for making use of more memory. The new chip would be a drop-in replacement for the 6502, at least in some applications. Chip designer Bill Gardai conceived of a new home computer using the new CPU, an 8-bit successor to the C64 and C128 that would eventually be known as the Commodore 65. The C65 would feature the 4502, packaged with other components as the 4510, along with an enhanced VIC-3 4567 graphics chip to follow the VIC-2 from the C64 and C128. Like the C128, the C65 would run existing C64 software and support most C64 peripherals. And the faster CPU, improved graphics, and target price would beat the new home game console everyone was talking about, the Nintendo Entertainment System. By 1989, Commodore needed the C65 to fill out the low end of its home computer line, something that would capitalize on the popularity of the 7-year-old C64 and be less expensive than the Amiga 500. Three people were tasked with delivering the new system in time for the 1989 holiday season. Gardai continued to work on the chipset. Fred Bowen developed the kernel ROM and BASIC 10 language, emboldened by a luxurious 256 kilobytes of ROM space and a budget to hire contractors. Paul Lassa designed the motherboard and hardware layout. Despite the team's best efforts, hopes for a 1989 release of the C65 were dashed by issues with the test chips coming back from the Commodore Semiconductor Group. Only a few prototype systems had been assembled by August 1989, and many bugs remained. The delays gave Lassa an opportunity to work on a new feature, a DMA chip capable of copying large regions of memory at high speed. Lassa even managed to sneak in Amiga-like features for drawing large graphical objects using the chip. Gardai and others worked on improving the 4502's compatibility with C64 software, made difficult by efficiency improvements that caused legacy programs to run with incorrect timing. By the time chip design stabilized, 1990 had come and gone. While there was still some residual momentum within Commodore to launch the C65 in 1991, North American sales teams were no longer interested, and work had already begun on a low-cost Amiga that would be released as the Amiga 600 the following year. Commodore leadership de-staffed the already understaffed teams, and the C-65 project was canceled. In the throes of financial difficulty, Commodore began selling off the contents of its warehouses in 1993, including an unknown number of C-65 prototypes, estimated to be fewer than 200. By mid-1994, Commodore was out of business. Paul's Commodore 65.
Okay, let's go over the Commodore 65 hardware so we can see the main unit here and the keyboard. So some of the familiar keys that we're used to. It's got tab and a few others added on, some of the sort of 128 kind of keys, more function keys than you could possibly need. Oh, and a four-way keypad, which is excellent with the cursor keys. No shift when you're going up through a directory, which is lovely. And just back around and again, and out, and have a quick look at the front-loading 3.5-inch floppy drive. And just come out and around, and here's the where the power and joysticks and power switch and reset is. Reset's on the left, so you can do Commodore reset for 64 mode really easy. Around the back, we have expansion port on the far right, which isn't compatible with the 64. Regular serial port for disk drives, that is. User port is the same as normal. Left and right audio, that's new. RGB video out is new. The other video output doesn't really work properly, and the disk drive port's empty on this one. Looking on the bottom, we can see the warranty seal, which, funnily enough, is broken because we've had to open it a few times. There's the trapdoor hatch on the bottom, a blank warranty and serial number plate. And looking inside now, we can see the keyboard, which is pretty much similar in construction to that in the Amiga 600, for example. We've got the ribbon connector, which is a source of breaks and problems from time to time. We've got the DMA chip, the CPU on the left, video chip on the right, 128K of RAM and 4 chips. And here's the ID of the board and some of the people involved in the design of the 65. Moving up past the trapdoor slot, we've got the oscillator and the two SID chips for full stereo, and there's a better view of them, and across to the ROM, which, as we can see, they were fiddling around the whole time with these. There's a floppy controller, not the latest model in the 65, but unlike some of the later ones, it actually works properly. And there's the Elmer power chips, and around to the slot there for the trapdoor.
The Commodore 65 prototypes drifted among dealers and enthusiasts, mostly as curiosities, considering there was no software written for the unreleased platform. On the outside, the prototypes looked nearly finished, with the familiar wedge-style case, keyboard, and built-in floppy drive. Inside, the prototypes varied, with inconsistent versions of the main board and chips. The kernel ROM was incomplete, no meaningful software existed other than a few simple in-house demos, and no documentation was publicly available at the time. One C-65 prototype made it into the hands of engineer Paul Gardner Stephen. Despite the lack of commercial software, Paul made regular use of the machine, learning what he could through experimentation and writing his own programs. Over the next 16 years, the historical value of the prototype machine eventually exceeded Paul's ability to care for it, and he sold it to a collector in the year 2010. For the lucky few that owned them, the C-65 was a glimpse into an alternate history with one more generation of 8-bit home computers. Paul conceived of a new 8-bit based on his experience with the C-65. By 2010, FPGA technology had become fast enough and inexpensive enough for a single person to develop such a computer without the large-scale chip fabrication facilities used by Commodore developers to iterate on the original designs. His C-65 now in other hands, Paul started work on the C-65GS, a new computer with the same spirit as the C-65 and some degree of backwards compatibility. Paul originally expected the project to take the form of an accelerator board that would connect to vintage Commodore 64 hardware. He soon upgraded this notion to a full mainboard replacement using a C64 case and keyboard. The C65GS would be built using an off-the-shelf FPGA development kit, so early stages of the project could proceed without fabricating any parts. Paul joins Mega.
What a whole interesting issue of understandable computers, and whether computers now have become so incomprehensibly complex that it's not putting our students at a disadvantage to actually learn the basics that will then let them go on to understand the complexity we now have. So, romanticised view of the 1980s. You know, computers were real computers in the 1980s. Programmers were real programmers. And small furry creatures from Alpha Centauri were real small furry creatures from Alpha Centauri. So, is this all a romantic memory, or is there something to this kind of perspective? And so it seems to me, and I don't have the evidence for this, and I would like to collect the evidence, that at least stereotypically, the programmers who came through in the 70s and 80s, where the computing hardware was so simple that it was effectively naked, and you had to understand, in fact, how the computer worked in a basic way. You had to know how a CPU did its thing. You need to know what memory was, and that this provided an effective scaffolding that has helped modern students. And as a result, they behave very causatively with the computers, but students now, in the 21st century, again, quite stereotypically here, interact in a much more symptomatic way. It's kind of, oh, it doesn't work, I'll reboot it, I'll, you know, roll the dice again in my code and hit resubmit, and hopefully it'll work. They're not able to reason in that deep way. And it's this whole question of to what extent is that because of the kinds of computers that we have them working on. So, and I've kind of said half of now what I'm going through here. So the computers now are terribly complicated, and so real computers aren't real computers anymore, and so therefore perhaps the programmers we're turning out, because of the way we're teaching them and what the complexity they're faced with from day one, they don't get to be what we might, again, romantically like to call a real programmer, you know, who can do crazy but probably useless things with there. So here is the question that I really want to try and explore, and I hope to explore over the next year or two if I get the opportunity, is, you know, can we recreate that deep understanding? Is there some kind of sensible new old computer system that is not a toy? Like, I mean, frequently, like the NAND to Tetris, I really love, because you start simple and they can get this kind of appreciation. But perhaps and I think actually part of the student engagement comes from Tetris is something they know. There is this cultural touch point with it. And so the computers of the 1980s have even more of that cultural touch point to get people interested. They can look at the old games, they can try them out and kind of get into the mode of, and mood of it, and get that emotional engagement that hopefully will let them prosper and, you know, and desire to learn how to do these things.
The Museum of Electronic Games and Art, MEGA, or MEGA, a German nonprofit organization dedicated to computer engineering education, creativity, and preservation, already had some experience recreating vintage computer history by the time they heard of Paul's project. In 2011, MEGA members recreated Tennis for Two from 1958, the early video game milestone played on an oscilloscope. In 2013, MEGA debuted their recreation of the Entex Adventure Vision from 1982, with its unique spinning mirror display. These projects produced research documentation, emulators, tools, and prototypes that would join MEGA's traveling exhibits that also included preserved hardware and modern demo software. MEGA was exploring a potential project based on the Commodore 65 when they discovered Paul's C65GS developer blog. MEGA and Paul joined forces and relaunched the project in April 2015 as the MEGA 65. The new computer would put Paul's FPGA-based design into historically accurate reproductions of the Commodore 65 case with keyboard and built-in 3.5-inch floppy drive, as well as modern conveniences such as digital video output and Ethernet connectivity.
Ja, herzlich willkommen. Ich stehe jetzt hier vor einem Rechner, dem es eigentlich so in der Form nie gegeben hat und auch nie wieder geben wird. Ein C65, aber kein echter. Es ist ein Nachbau. Und derjenige, der für die Technik verantwortlich ist, das ist hier der Detlef. Grüß dich, Detlef.
Hallo.
Hallo. Erzähl uns doch mal gerade, was ist das genau? Das ist kein echter C65, er sieht nur so aus. Was ist da eigentlich drin?
Richtig. Wir haben uns erlaubt, dem auch einen eigenen Namen zu geben. Den nennen wir nämlich Mega 65. Das heißt, die Basis ist der C65. Der Rechner ist C65-kompatibel, damit auch C64-kompatibel. Wobei wir die C65-Kompatibilität zum C64 noch deutlich verbessert haben gegenüber dem Original. Aber er hat auch neue Features, die der C65 nicht hatte. wir nennen es immer so, wir haben das ein bisschen fertig gemacht, was Commodore angefangen hat. Der C65 hat im Original ja Bitplanes, wie der Amiga. Ist aber mit 3,5 MHz und einem 8-Bit-CPU viel zu langsam, um die sinnhaft zu nutzen. Das heißt, du hast statische Bilder, aber du kannst es nicht modifizieren, die Bitplanes. Aufgrund der erhöhten Geschwindigkeit ist es mit unserem System möglich. Der ist also 30 Mal so schnell wie der C65 und 45 Mal so schnell wie der C64.
Wie kompatibel ist das Ganze denn? Ich meine, ihr konntet ja kaum...
Keyboard Cases and Community. Mega made steady progress on the keyboard case, exhibiting generations of prototypes in 2015 and 2016. FPGA development was well underway. Paul and Detlef established the project with open source and open hardware licenses and began the process of building a community of volunteer developers and testers. Paul published regular updates to his developer blog. As part of his work as a researcher and lecturer at Flinders University in Australia, Paul used the Mega 65 as a learning platform for his students. Mega began promoting the project to solicit developer interest and to stoke the imagination of the vintage computing community.
From our perspective, we are making a replica-enhanced Commodore 65. The fact that we don't have billions of dollars to run a chip fab to get our own chips fabbed means that we do have to use FPGAs, as the C1 did, to achieve that. But what we're producing is something that when you look at it from the outside, you're going to think, hey, where did someone get $40,000 to buy themselves a Commodore 65 from? You know, it will look almost completely identical to an original Commodore 65. And indeed, the prototypes we have now, if you stand a meter away, you'd have a hard time picking it out. In fact, when Detlef uploaded one of the new pictures of the second prototype recently, someone said, oh, that's not really one of your prototypes. You've just taken a picture of a real Commodore 65 to make it look like you've done a whole pile of progress. So when people start not being able to tell that you've made it yourself, this is success. And so we're quite happy with our progress in that direction, I think.
Megaphone, the big picture. It's easy to assume that the warm feelings we have for personal computers from our childhoods are purely nostalgia. Perhaps we only feel this way about these piles of junk because we grew up with them. But most people I know in this hobby cite another reason for the attraction: simplicity. Modern computing is built upon huge stacks of software. The lowest layers wrangle the unfathomable complexity of electrons coursing through switching circuits, and upper layers make the computer easier to program and easier to use. Over time, the depth and complexity of these layers have grown to alienate a computer's owner from its power, ceding control of our data-driven personhood to software and service companies. Even when this exchange has obvious benefits, you didn't have to code that web browsing program to use it, we get the creeping sense that our modern computers aren't entirely ours. The technological centerpieces of our lives are merely rented, not owned, and don't always act in our best interests. In contrast, vintage computers are knowable, stable, comfortable. They do what you tell them to and don't do anything else. There are no background processes, there's no unsolicited network activity, there are no operating system updates being installed remotely by the manufacturer, and there's no user telemetry data being sent out to who knows where by something you didn't know you installed years ago. It doesn't take rose-tinted glasses to see this has some benefit over modern commercially available computing products, something valuable that we may have lost. Could modern-day personal computing learn from its ancestry? Could we restore the powers and freedoms we once had without sacrificing utility, or are the trade-offs we've made for modern conveniences inevitable? Could the implicit principles of early personal computing be applied intentionally to the design of a modern computer, to a smartphone? The Megaphone attempts to answer that question. Funded by grants from the NLNet Foundation, Megaphone is the modern smartphone reimagined through the lens of the Mega 65 and Commodore 8-bit computers. It's literally the same platform, running the Mega 65 FPGA core and ROM on portable hardware, extended with discrete mobile communication components. The apps are just programs, and you can write your own phone apps in BASIC 65 or machine code. The Megaphone architecture takes personal security and privacy to its strongest useful conclusion. mobile computing not beholden to a single manufacturer or provider, accessible and extensible by its user.
As I was making this talk, it was really, there were three different talks that I thought about that had, this was really trying to do, but we only have time for one. So each of you have to choose which talk you want to listen to and pay attention from that perspective. So one of them is this whole question of how can we make a computer that we can trust in this modern age? And another talk is this whole question of digital sovereignty. How can we actually be sovereigns over the hardware we own? And of course, as an open source community, this is a topic that comes up repeatedly in so many different ways. And finally, there's one about reducing the resources required to innovate in the mobile telephony space. Because my regular mobile phone is arguably one of the best Android phones you can get from an open perspective. It's a Fairphone 2. I can take it apart. I can take the screen off without any tools. I can run whatever I want on it within reason. But as Matthew said about in the previous talk, we've got no idea really what's actually going on in there. And it's too complex to actually have confidence.
Pre-series, case molds, and dev kits. The Mega 65 hit another milestone towards wide distribution with the pre-series prototypes in 2019, a short run of complete units with early revision R2 mainboards. These were sold privately to team members to raise money for the next phase of the project. The final version of the Mega 65 would use an injection molding process to produce the replica plastic case and keycaps. Unlike short-run processes like the vacuum shaping used for the pre-series cases, injection molding requires a significant upfront tooling cost, carving the shape of the plastic into reusable metal molds capable of surviving the injection process. Mega turned to the growing community of enthusiasts for support, raising over 69,000 euros in donations. While the final cases were being developed, Mega wanted to get the nearly completed mainboards into the hands of eager developers. They produced a limited run of feature-complete Mega 65 dev kit models, with cases made from clear laser-cut acrylic panels. These would be the first Mega 65s sold to the public. The 100 units sold out quickly.
At the moment, we're in revision 4 of the case. Our manufacturer is at the moment working on revision 5. We have a lot of improvements during the time, but at the same time, we still can say that we stay the precious to the original Commodore 65. So as you can see, dimension, look, and so on is still exactly the same as before. We are in a step where we can say, yes, we do have the same level of quality that we wanted to achieve. So we have a sturdy case, and the case looks absolutely amazing. Also from the inside, we already mentioned it, we added a lot of screw bosses for possible future expansions, for an example, mounting loudspeakers and so on. So from our point, the case is almost done and hopefully soon ready for mass production, even if this still takes a bit.
Hey, this is Retro Combs, and I am thrilled today to share with you my Mega 65 assembly video and first use. We're going to take a look at the entire Mega 65 process as I go from open the box to assembly to first use. It's going to be really exciting. The dev kit provides early access to hardware and software so developers can begin programming with the hope that new programs and games, utilities, and productivity are available when the Mega 65 is finally released, again, hopefully in 2021. So what is in this thing? It has a Xilinx Atrix A7200T FPGA that functions as a 40 megahertz 8-bit processor to support both C65 and C64 modes. Yes, it has C64 mode support, much like the Commodore 128. What's great about the FPGA that's built into this is it has more than one core, which means the Mega can actually emulate, and it's not really true emulation, it's a hardware recreation of processors, but it can, we're going to say for this video, we're going to say emulate. It can emulate more than the C64, C65. You can add additional cores. This FPGA could also become an Amiga computer if somebody were to build that core.
So I wanted to get the screen scrolling. So the normal method for this is you set up an IRQ interrupt, a raster interrupt. You cycle through some scroll values, either horizontal or vertical scroll values, from 7 to 0. When you overlap and when you kind of overflow, then you shift the screen up. Basically, you take all the data on the screen, all the color data and all the screen RAM, all the character data, and you shift it in the direction that you're trying to scroll things. Now, this is probably one of the most painful things to do on the C64, and it's the reason why you have games that have limited colors when you scroll, because obviously scrolling colors is a pain in the ass, but you cannot relocate color RAM on a C64. However, on the Mega 65, that is not the case. So what happens on the Mega 65 is you still have the hardware scroll registers, and you can actually see on here, let me just make this a little bit bigger. One of the hardware scroll registers is actually by default, it's off a little bit on the Mega 65. But the cool thing with the Mega 65 is instead of having to shift all the contents of the screen, what you can do is you can just say the screen is actually at this location. So on the Commodore 64, you can change the screen within 1024 bytes. So you can change the screen from 0400 to 0800. To 0C100, to 1000, to 1400, to 1800. So you can move, you can change where the screen is. And we use that for double buffering, and we switch between two screens very quickly. And it's useful for doing things. And one of the things it's useful for is speeding up scrolling. However, on the Mega 65, you can move the screen one byte in any direction. So you can say the screen is at 0400, but now I want the screen to be 0401. Now I want the screen to be at 0402. So what you can essentially do is you can start drawing the screen from anywhere in memory that you want. And it's an incredible feature, because what it means is you no longer have to shift any of the color, any of the screen RAM at all. What you can do is, instead of, say you want to shift the screen up, normally you would grab every one of those 1000 bytes and you would move them up in memory. You'd move them backwards in memory, 40 spaces in memory. On the Mega 65, all you need to do is say, the screen is no longer at the location you're looking at now. It's 40 characters ahead of that. And the whole screen will move up by 40 characters. And so that's what I'm doing in this IRQ. So what this IRQ does is it goes through the scroll values. It subtracts our scroll speed from our scroll. And it applies that to D011 like we would expect. But if we overlap, if we kind of wrap around from 0 to 7, what it does is it changes the screen base. It changes where the screen is actually drawn from. We tell it to load the screen at this screen base location. And in this case, it's 50000. So this is actually where our screen is here. I've moved the screen data to this location. But every time we move the screen up by one row, all I do is I go in and I add 80 characters to that screen row. I add 80 characters because that is our logical characters per row. That's how many memory addresses are taken up by that. And I can move the entire screen up by one without shifting anything in memory. All I'm doing is saying, this is where the new screen starts.
Okay, very exciting day, because a package has arrived from Trends Electronic. And it's a Mega 65. Oh yes, let's get into it.
Now, I ordered this back in June, and Trends Electronic were charged with putting this kit together. Handily, the Mega 65 team have created an assembly video, so I'm going to follow that as I go. Oh, look at that mainboard. What a thing of beauty. We'll revisit it in a minute. As you can see, the main shell is acrylic. It feels like putting together a school project, but you also get a repurposed floppy drive, the keyboard, a few cables, and the mainboard, of course. Putting the whole thing together was pretty straightforward, and you get to rip off copious amounts of protective covering, so that's satisfying. But I did have a few issues with my particular kit. First is that these clear washers were definitely the wrong size. Rather than slipping onto these screws easily, they required considerable force to even start to thread on. And this isn't how washers are supposed to be. So where they were required for spacing, I substituted my own rubber washers, which worked out quite nicely. The keyboard, I must say, is phenomenal. It's a mechanical affair with Cherry MX switches and double shot keycaps. Each press requires slightly more than your usual amount of force, but it feels so sturdy and expensive. I believe this is the final keyboard, so that will be on the finished Mega 65, which is nice.
Picking up steam. The Mega 65 project had permission from Commodore intellectual property licensor Cloanto to distribute the original Commodore 65 prototype kernel ROM with the computer. The code dumped from the C65 prototype ROM chips was incomplete, and it seemed clear that it wouldn't provide the best experience for Mega 65 owners in its original form. The team formed two projects to address this. One group dug out the original Commodore 65 kernel source code from archives, wrote a custom assembler compatible with its vintage syntax, and began fixing bugs, completing features, and adding useful extensions. Another group began work on an all-new ROM, a cleanroom implementation of the kernel intended to be API compatible with software written in BASIC 10 or using C65 kernel APIs, using no original Commodore IP so that it could be fully open-source licensed. The closed ROM, open ROM, and the original C65 prototype ROM would be included with the Mega 65, with an easy way for users to switch between them. The closed ROM was the most complete option by the time of launch, and it was chosen as the default experience. Meanwhile, the community began writing and polishing a professional quality user's guide to be printed and included in the box. The guide included a complete reference for the closed ROM's built-in BASIC with the latest extensions, now called BASIC 65 to differentiate it from the original C65's BASIC 10. The typesetting was designed to resemble an idealized form of the original Commodore 64 manuals, and contributors spent many months editing and testing the material. By September 2021, the Mega 65 was finally ready for its first production run. Manufacturing and distribution partner Trends Electronic opened for pre-orders and sold out the first batch within a few days.
We were absolutely amazed that we noticed throughout the last couple of weeks, months already, the interest in the community raised quite a lot. So not even our team itself did some tech demos. I think Deft is actually loading something at the moment. Also from the community, fans of the project started to develop on the Mega 65 in BASIC 10. They actually investigated into the Commodore 65 kernel ROM and so on. So I just give over to Deft.
That's just a little BASIC demo from Stefan Kleinert, and it's like one screen of BASIC commands, and what it does, it shows some nice fractals. So obviously it takes even with 40 megahertz a while to draw everything, but it's a really nice demo on what you can do. So let me show you another thing, which is like an engine demo for 3D games like Wolfenstein. It's called Mega Maze. And as you can see, it uses DMA copy to quickly draw this 3D world. And this is also something we have made open source, so developers can start making, for example, adventure games or shooters right away.
So for notes, I'd like you to think about, if you ever watched the musical The Sound of Music, think about Julie Andrews and the children singing the Do-Re-Mi song. If you haven't watched this film, I highly recommend it. It's a great family film, and it'll definitely introduce your kids to music in a nice, positive way. And the Do-Re-Mi song, think of that in the American notation, that's equating to C, D, E, F, G, A, B. And yeah, that's the scale of notes on a piano. And before we go into that, let's play around with Zimu and let's try out some of these notes so you get a feel for it. So C, D, E. And you can imagine if you go up the scale, you're playing all the notes C, D, E, F, G, A, B. Okay.
Production models. Thousands of people joined the queue for the new computer, excited that the project was close to achieving its lofty goals, and perhaps eager for something to do at home during the continuing global health crisis. Unfortunately, that same crisis disrupted supply chains for electronic components and other materials, and Trends had to delay delivery of the first batch by several months. Subsequent delivery dates would be difficult to predict, dependent entirely on availability of components. Work continued on the FPGA core and kernel ROM projects. The Mega 65 was designed to be upgradable, such that everyone who would receive hardware would continue to benefit from improvements. The first batch of computers shipped with what would be known as version 0.9 of the platform. Also included with every computer, an SD card populated with dozens of programs written by early developers, dev kit owners, and team members. When a new owner first turns on the Mega 65, they are greeted by the Intro Disk menu, a colorful animated display with jaunty music. The SD card also bundled many Commodore 64 games and demos, which the user could run from the Commodore 65's C64 compatibility mode. I received my Mega 65 in May of 2022. To help new owners get over some of the rough patches in the early experience while the team worked to fix them, I wrote a welcome guide with advice and explanations. The project needed help staying in contact with people waiting on pre-orders and others who had expressed interest, so I started Dan's Mega 65 Digest, a monthly email newsletter and read-aloud podcast. My hope was to get more information about the Mega 65 into various forms of online media, improve the ability to find the project through search engines, and keep people informed of project activity as we bootstrapped the community.
Which is a nonprofit organization consisting of volunteers. The stats of this 8-bit computer are impressive. At a high level, it is an FPGA-based computer with a large amount of attention paid towards the physical aesthetics. The fact that the Mega team, across all these years, managed to actually ship a fully functional Commodore-inspired computer with a real physical floppy drive and mechanical keyboard feels almost like a miracle. Especially in 2022, with continuous global supply chain disruptions and shortages. The Mega 65 is currently being sold in two batches. The first batch of 400 machines sold out in a matter of days. The second batch is still being sold at this time, and the number of machines in that batch is 1,000. After that, well, who knows if there will be more. I was in batch number 1, and my machine is number 323.
I don't know where to start.
On the menu today?
I could make a whole hour-long video about how this thing smells, but we won't do that today. Instead, join me as we unbox, is this the mouse? The Mega 65.
Welcome.
All right, who's excited? The box, by the way, is huge and heavy. It says Trends Electronic on it, which is, I think, their distributor. We're staying on trend here for our retro content. Okay. Wow. Oh, okay. Peanuts everywhere. Put that on eBay. Oh. This is sexy and juicy and, oh yeah. I'm trying to recall that feeling of when I think I was 12 or 13 when I got my Commodore 64. I don't even remember the box, but I remember the feeling, the vibe. Strangely, I remember the Apple IIe box because they were sitting in the hallway of my parents' house when I came home, and that was very exciting to see our first ever computer. But this is definitely, oh, it's beautiful. I don't even need to say anything, you get it. All right, so here we are. The Mega 65 is ready. We've got our user guide. So let's embark on our old school style discovery of this product. I want you to join me in trying to pretend or imagine that we are 15 years old. We've just got this brand new Commodore 65, and all we've got is our bedroom, our monitor, our keyboard, and our user guide. You ready? Thank you. It's kind of like the SID chip. Should I say SID chips are singing to us? Of course, this has double SID chips emulated. Not emulated, replicated on the FPGA. In stereo, no less. So that means we've got six voices playing this beautiful song. And this, the thing I think about this, I've been thinking about it for a few days, I don't think they could have picked a better song, because it's sort of that singing and the flashing lights. It's just the promise of what's to come from this machine. So they've done a really good job.
The second batch. The first delivery batch in May 2022 consisted of 400 units. Another 400 units shipped 8 months later in 2023. The supply chain crisis was ongoing, with limited FPGA supply going to the world's biggest customers and leaving smaller projects on hold. As word spread about the project, more people got in line, but many who pre-ordered in late 2021 were still waiting. With more computers in the hands of developers, the Mega 65 was coming into its own, both as a capable 8-bit home computer with attractive features for games and demos, and as an FPGA platform for alternate computer chipsets. One of the most influential FPGA projects was the C64 Core, a highly accurate recreation of the Commodore 64 based on a similar project for the Mr. FPGA platform. The C64 Core was especially welcomed by Mega 65 owners who were hoping to use it as a C64 while waiting for the community to produce more Mega 65 software. The original Commodore 65 team never fully overcame design choices that limited compatibility with existing C64 software, and some speculate that this was a contributing factor that led to the C65 getting canceled. With the C64 Core, the Mega 65 could reconfigure itself with a C64 chipset and run nearly all C64 software with high fidelity. Then came the first Mega 65 accessories. Publisher Polyplay released several Mega 65 games as deluxe boxed editions. Paul designed a 4-player joystick adapter for the cartridge port, and Jim Happel assembled some to distribute along with a disc of 4-player games. Boutique vintage computer clothier So Ready produced a dust cover for the C65 and Mega 65. I designed a machine code quick reference for the CPU that you can purchase as a mouse pad or a poster. Paul also started work on an expansion board, a DIY kit that could sit inside the Mega 65 case and provide additional hardware features. The expansion board is still a work in progress. We declared a new release of the Mega 65 platform, specifically the Mega 65 Core, ROM, and system software, as version 0.95 in late 2022, in time to be installed at the factory on second batch machines. Of course, owners of first-batch machines could upgrade to 0.95 for free. To accompany the release, we finished a second edition of the user guide that was used for the next printing of bundled manuals, and also made it available via print-on-demand so owners of the first edition could upgrade this as well.
So, the Mega 65 is not really about just recreating what Commodore made. It's recreating the experience of having a Commodore computer. In fact, the experience of getting a new Commodore computer, figuring out what is this, what does it do? The unfamiliarity of the thing is part of the experience, and it has like some new features to explore, new basic commands, new assembly language capabilities, new software that can be written for it, new video features, all this other stuff. Paul calls this the Christmas morning experience. It's like the recreation of the experience of getting the new computer and just wondering what in the world can it do. So historical preservation is a goal, but it is secondary because it is largely about this experience. And the Commodore 65 compatibility does come up as a secondary goal, but it's hard to know what that means. There's not a lot of software for the Commodore 65. It's mostly just like, yeah, let's try to stay as close to a Commodore 65 as is practical to preserve that experience of owning a Commodore.
In a previous video I did on the Commodore 65, a rare prototype of a Commodore 64 successor, I had mentioned the Mega 65, which is a modern recreation of that. I also mentioned that I'd never been able to acquire one for a video. And so I'd like to introduce you to Dan. He's part of the actual Mega 65 team, and he flew all the way from Seattle to show me a Mega 65.
Yeah, I heard you didn't get a chance to play with one yet, so I thought I'd bring one down. I don't have an extra one. This is my own personal Mega 65, but I thought I'd bring it down to show you.
Okay, so let's go ahead and get something out of the way, because I'm sure a lot of people are going to be asking about this. They're going to say, well, David, don't you have this Commander X16? Isn't this going to be a competing product? Why would I do a review of this? And I would just like to point out that over the last several years, I've done a number of reviews on what could be considered competing products, such as the little mini like C64s and the Amigas and stuff like that. I've done the Gigatron, I've done the Mini Pet, and I've got another one I'm going to be doing here eventually, the Aquarius Plus. So, yep, I got one of those on hand too. I just happen to like all these systems. I think that they're pretty cool, and I think my viewers like to see them. So, having said that, I think that we are going to do some comparisons between the Mega 65 and the Commander X16 later, just so people can kind of see what does make them different. But I also think that they're similar enough that we're hoping to see some software synergy between these.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're similar architectures, similar CPUs in a lot of cases, similar graphics capabilities, sound capabilities. Even though they are very different in some cases in interesting ways, there is a lot of potential for a single investment in a game project or something like that to benefit all of these platforms by reusing the game assets and even some of the game logic.
Yeah, if you've ever heard that term, the rising tide lifts all boats, we kind of feel like that applies to these retro computers. The Phoenix project could be included in that as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's do a quick comparison. At the hardware level, the Mega 65 is essentially powered entirely by an FPGA, whereas the Commander X16 runs on discrete DIP package chips, more similar to computers from the past. I'm not necessarily saying one design is better than the other. At this point, it's just a different way of doing things, and each concept appeals to different groups of people. So, CPU-wise, the Mega 65 has a 16-bit CPU running at 40 MHz, which is backwards compatible with the CPU in the X16, which is a 8 MHz 6502. Then there's the 8 MB versus 2 MB of RAM. Both machines have very nice graphic systems that can display 4,096 unique colors. Each one has their pros and cons of how they work. The Mega 65 has 12 channels of SID sound, or like having 4 SID chips. The X16 has a combination of FM and PSG channels. Both systems have a stereo DAC for sound effects. Also, both systems use an SD card for primary storage, and both systems run a variant of Commodore BASIC. So, as you can see, they have more in common than you might think. And one big difference is the price. The Mega 65 currently sells for 666 euros, which at the time of filming roughly translates to $740 US, and the X16 sells for $350 US. And there are certainly reasons why the Mega 65 is more expensive, so let's take a look. The first thing you'll notice about the Mega 65 is, of course, the case. It's a very nice injection molded plastic case, which is almost identical to the Commodore 65. The keys themselves are also very nice and use mechanical switches, which feel great to type on. On the rear, you get audio output here. The next slot is for one of these tiny micro SD cards that slides in there. Next, you have Ethernet, HDMI compatible video, VGA, a standard Commodore disk drive port, cartridge port, and the power port. On the side, we have power, 2 joystick ports, and a reset button. The rest of the port areas on the side are blank, and you'll see why shortly, but I just wanted to point out that this USB jack is not standard. This was added by Dan, and this is for external reprogramming of the computer. And check out this spiral-bound user manual. This is something I'm quite jealous of that we don't yet have for the X16. This is really nice, and it definitely has the look and feel of the Commodore 64 manual.
I do have to comment that I am absolutely astounded by the quality, not only of the machine itself, but packaging and presentation. This is a real product, insofar as it's more of a product than anything I've bought in I don't know how many years. Everything about this truly exudes pride of workmanship, which is exceedingly absent in most commercial products today. I blame the mindset that faster and cheaper is better, which is for the most part where we find ourselves. From the box all the way through to the thoughtful interior packaging design, documentation, and of course the machine, everything feels like real care was put into every facet. The machine itself is a beauty. The case quality is stunning. It is polished, high quality, and visually accurate. I don't, however, own a C65 to physically compare it to.
One thing to know about the Mega 65 is that there is an 80 characters mode and a 40 characters mode. 40 character mode is just like on the C64. And it, to me, it feels a bit more old school and more retro. And that's why I also coded the game using this mode. Because as you can see now, all the graphics are little squares. And I prefer that for the look of a game. But during coding, it can be very helpful to use the 80 characters mode, because then you have much more space on the screen for your lines. So for example, you can see the level much better in 80 character mode versus 40 character mode. You can switch the modes by pressing the escape key followed by the X key.
General availability. Keeping a hardware project perpetually available at low volumes requires some flexibility when it comes to components. The Mega 65 is not a mass-produced appliance, and neither Mega nor Trends can purchase and store thousands of identical parts just to keep using the same mainboard design. In 2023, Trends notified the team that components of the R3A revision of the mainboard used in the first 800 Mega 65s shipped would soon become unavailable. Paul updated the board design with newer replacement parts. He also took the opportunity to fix a few issues we encountered with R3A boards, such as unreliable real-time clock chips. The R6 mainboard revision would be used for Mega 65s going forward, at least until the next component end-of-life notice. Some members of the community expressed concern that the hardware revision meant that some Mega 65s were different than others, and certain products might only work with one revision or another. This was mostly noticed with the FPGA core projects, which needed to be updated by their authors for the newer board. Eventually, nearly all alternate cores were updated for both mainboard revisions. As of this writing, only a few arcade cores remain to be updated. More controversially, the R6 mainboard included a few extra features in addition to repairs. At the request of the community, Trends Electronic began selling bare mainboards for anyone wishing to upgrade. By 2024, the supply chain crisis abated. All remaining pre-orders for Mega 65s were fulfilled, and Trends Electronic upgraded the Mega 65 to in-stock status in their store. Today, Trends assembles computers in small batches to keep new orders for the Mega 65 on a short delivery timeline.
Hey. Yeah. Ooh, look at that. Disc 0, number 2, and number 3.
Do we need a disc? It's got some.
No,
SD
it's already built
in.
Correct.
It's
asking
you
to
pick one.
Okay. 1, 2, or 3.
Let's
pick
try one.
Okay. Oh yes. Wow. There it is. Intro disc.
It's so colorful. Let's try demo one. Oh, Bitplane Cube, Basic,
sure.
65, Camelot, colors. Land 65. Snow. I can't decide. Let's try one. Playing cube. That sounds good. Loading bit playing cube. This program requires switching from NTSC to PAL.
PAL.
PAL. I like the noise.
Oh, there goes. Yay!
Look at that! It's a cube!
And, the chipset is a recreation of all the original chips, including the CPU, which, as I said, is a successor to the 6502. The 65CE02 was meant to be its marketing name. It did not actually see the light of day except in one Amiga peripheral. I forget if it was a serial device or something like that, but which is a real shame, because the 65CE02 had some real fun extra advantages. Just looking at the instruction set, had some amazing features in it. And so it's really fun to have a recreation of that to play with that's in the 6502 lineage, but has some cool features that were appropriate of the era. Similarly, the VIC-3 that Commodore had designed and planned for the Commodore 65 had a bunch of features. We call ours the VIC-4 because we wanted to add a few more features. And it's worth pointing out that, like, this idea of, yeah, it's very tempting when you get some hobbyist engineers developing on a platform like this to go beyond the recreation and sort of build it out and stuff. And you don't want to get too far away from the original vision, because then you just end up with like a modern computer with modern parts, and then it becomes just kind of an arbitrarily modern computer. And one of the things I really like about the Mega 65 is how They used the technology of the era to guide those decisions, to make sure that they don't go too far. It's still very comfortable. It's still very interesting. But it's all stuff, anything that got added to the Mega 65 above the Commodore 65 was present in computers of the early 1990s. So it still feels very much like that. And all of that Commodore history is baked in. You get a real feeling that this is a Commodore that you're using. The Commodore BASIC, the Ready Prompt, everything is very familiar, even though there is still stuff that's new. The newness, though, is also a big part of it. I think a lot of people are attracted to it because there is undiscovered country here. Some of it is from the Commodore 65, some of it is from the Mega 65, but everything else is familiar. So you start out with a Commodore 64-like architecture, and with all the simplicity that that brings, with, you know, a bank of hardware registers and some RAM, and just go to it and write some machine code, or even just write in BASIC and figure it out from there. Then you can just start like creeping into the sort of extra stuff to see what it does and start folding it into your knowledge base of how these computers work. And it's a very gradual, very layered.
Let me talk about how C64 mode differs between the C128 and the Mega 65, because understanding why there's a difference makes all the difference in understanding what the Mega 65 is. The Mega 65, just as the C65, I think, isn't pretending to be a C64 in the sense the C128 64 mode is. On the C128, the MMU, that's the memory management unit, is taking care of connecting many of the ICs in the right way, especially the second 64K of RAM. The C64 only had 64K of RAM, but it also needed to swap ROMs in and out of that memory area. And the chip responsible for that was the PLA. Now the C128 has both an MMU and a PLA. Now when entering C64 mode on the 128, the MMU is more or less disconnected from the CPU and the PLA is taking over. So all the hardware that makes a C64 a C64 is basically also existing on the C128. And most of the C128 specifics are just not accessible in C64 mode. To go back to C128 mode, you will have to reset the machine. The Mega 65 is also mapping the C64 kernel and BASIC ROMs to the right memory addresses, but it is done in a much more flexible way, and I will talk about the details in a second. The result is that when in Go 64 mode on the Mega 65, you can also go back to Mega 65 mode without resetting the machine. And now you see Go 64 mode is not really a hardwired mode. It's just different ROMs being loaded and mapped. For staying compatible to the C64, there's more than just ROMs, of course. The graphics chip, for example. The VIC-4 can be configured to only expose the registers that are also available on native VIC-2 and VIC-3 chips. And you, the programmer, are free to change that configuration as you wish.
The next 10 years. The thing that excites me most about the Mega 65 is that I keep meeting new people who are also excited about it. Trends Electronic continues to receive new orders, and sometimes people tell me when they place their orders after seeing the Mega 65 at a conference or in a YouTube video. I've met people who have never heard of it before, people who heard rumors about it in the early days, and people who are on the verge of buying one and decided to take the plunge. Kids love it, at least the ones attending vintage computing conventions. They play the games, but they have just as much fun flipping through the user's guide and trying out the BASIC commands. A healthy recreational computing community has multiple layers, each one grown from and supported by the one below it. Initially, these layers form around the platform itself: hardware hackers, FPGA core developers, kernel coders, technical writers. Then new people try it out and find purchase to explore their interests and to share their results. Programming learners, game makers, demo sceners, tool builders, media creators. As people are inspired by the passions of others, they contribute their own passions back, giving everyone more ways to enjoy and engage. People come and go, but the surface area continues to expand. This, more than anything, is what prevents technological abstractions from alienating users. There are people at every layer willing to help other people learn and explore. What I most like about the Mega 65 specifically is how its layered design welcomes a community with diverse backgrounds and interests. The authentic Commodore-style BASIC is more accessible than ever, for running programs and for learning how to write new ones. Programmers, both novice and expert, can explore the undiscovered country of the architecture, pushing this alternate 8-bit timeline forward. And Commodore enthusiasts can access a previously inaccessible piece of history, use it with vintage peripherals and software, and summon more platforms with FPGA cores. The community at the FPGA layer has been surprisingly active in the last couple of years. The Mr. to Mega 65 framework and the excellent work of the Mr. community draw a clear path towards someday having a complete Commodore computer museum that fits on your desk in an authentic Commodore keyboard wedge form factor. C65, Mega 65, and C64 cores exist today. PET and VIC-20 cores have public test releases, and there's a great deal of interest in a potential Amiga core as well. There are cores for the ZX Spectrum, Game Boy, and TI-99/4A, with an Apple IIe core also in development, not to mention a dozen arcade cabinet cores. The Mega 65 has huge potential as an FPGA learning tool as well. Specific to the Mega 65 platform, that's the core, ROM, and system software, the Mega 65 Steering Committee is marshaling the project on a steady path to a version 1.0 release, with an emphasis on feature quality and API stability. Development will continue beyond version 1.0, using a high bar for backwards compatibility of changes, while continuing to track the interests of the community as it evolves and grows. As the current ROM lead, I'm especially interested in formalizing more of the kernel API surface and building hooks for third-party extensions. Inner layers beget outer layers. And we have tons of ideas for improving the non-platform parts of the user experience: on-screen interfaces, documentation, PC tools, networking. Megaphone Research will contribute features back into the Mega 65 platform. It may even be hardware you can purchase someday. The Mega 65 hardware will continue to adapt to shifts in global conditions as resources allow, so the community can continue to grow. To ensure the growth and longevity of the platform and the community, we must continue to pump energy through the layers, inviting more people with diverse interests and enthusiasm. It's why I write this digest. If you find this digest useful, please consider becoming a supporter. Visit ko-fi.com/DDDAAANNN. Congratulations to the Mega 65 team on an incredible 10 years. See you next month. This podcast edition of the Digest featured audio excerpts from the following sources: the YouTube channels of Paul Gardner Stephen, Gercha, Mega 65, Retrocombs, Shallon, Nostalgia Nerd, Amiga Love, Retro Recipes, The 8-Bit Guy, 8-Bit Resurgence, Dr. Wuro, and The 8-Bit Theory. Also, the Scene World podcast, and conference interviews and presentations from Amiga 30, LinuxConf Australia, Pacific Commodore Expo Northwest, and CRX. Please see the article for links to all of these sources. For more of this digest, visit my website, dansanderson.com/mega65.